The U.S. government recently terminated National Institutes of Health and other federal grants funding work that it considered to be focused on DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion. These moves conflate research on health equity with work that aims to change the composition and climate of the scientific workforce and institutions. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Nancy Krieger, a professor of social epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Dr. Krieger has co-authored a perspective article about federal funding cuts and the importance of health equity research. Dr. Krieger, what actions has the executive branch taken with regard to federally funded research that it considers to pertain to DEI?
What the concerns are about the federal government are twofold. One, the actual cuts to funding on research that it's labeled DEI, whether that research is concerned with health equity or whether it's concerned with changing the composition of the scientific workforce. And secondly, it is also about the statements the government has made through executive orders and through other statements of policy regarding ways in which it understands or views or denies the question of how structural racism harms health, relegating ideas of structural racism to the realm of quote-unquote ideology, which is highly problematic.
So, to start, in what ways have those actions indicated a misunderstanding of research on health equity and the difference between that work and DEI efforts?
There has been a consistent lack of explanation of how the government used quote unquote DEI for the termination of NIH grants. This was a central point that came up in the case that had, among others, APHA as its plaintiff regarding the termination of grants for reasons of being DEI and other disfavored topics. And the judge in that case, Judge Young, repeatedly asked the government lawyers for definitions of DEI, and they provided none. And that was part of what led to his ruling on June 16th, saying that the steps taken by the government to ban funding for these grants on that basis was illegitimate and also constituted racial discrimination, was unconstitutional, and was not remediable. So that's a really important point, which is that it is a charge that is stated but is not well defined. And again, a real concern about conflation between the idea of grants that were geared to changing who is in the scientific workforce, reflecting histories and legacies of who is and is not easily able to get the kind of training to become a scientist, which is much longer than just this administration and is a much longer conversation. And that's one kind of work that is important. It's not to say that who people are vis-a-vis their identity by definition says what their worldview is and what kind of science they're going to do. That's a very reductive kind of view that is not helpful. But it does make a difference, and research has shown this, and this is not my area of research, about the importance of having more different kinds of people involved in the doing of science to test its credibility and claims. And there's a very useful book on Why Trust Science by a colleague named Naomi Oreskes in the History of Science department here at Harvard that has looked at the research that shows that you want to have robust discussion of ideas and assumptions as well as testing of evidence. And if you have a very narrow set of people involved, then you only get the narrow sets of assumptions that go with those people. And a core set of assumptions in the scientific workforce reflecting centuries of scientific training has been the embedding of scientific racism. And the work to undo and expose the assumptions, the false assumptions of scientific racism about racially distinct groups with some superior and some inferior is part of the work that's needed to change not only the composition of the scientific workforce, but also the kinds of science done and the kinds of questions asked. Being able to ask questions about the impacts of many different aspects of the societal phenomenon of racism, from societal to institutional to interpersonal to individual, is a really important part of understanding who and what drives health inequities and who and what needs to do what to alter them and reduce them. And these are scientific questions that can be asked with empirically falsifiable hypotheses to test using appropriate exposure measures in relation to appropriate outcomes. So being clear that the work for health equity is about understanding the drivers of health inequity at a population level and what they do to translate to become embodied so that people manifest them in their own health status, that's really important scientific work. And that should not be dismissed as just a matter of ideology. If ideology is a question, it's an ideology saying that looking at how injustice harms health doesn't matter.
So, a practical question. After the court ruling that you describe, what's the current legal status of the cuts?
So my understanding, and I want to be very clear, I am an epidemiologist. I am not a lawyer. So I can give the comment and response as an affected scientist, but not someone who can offer a detailed legal interpretation, because that's outside of my expertise. What happened was the government appealed. The Supreme Court, in an emergency docket ruling, made a split decision. And what's interesting is that typically only half of the decision got discussed, which is that it lifted the stay on what the judge had put on the restoring the funding to the grants. That was 5-4. But what was also 5-4 was not at all challenging the ruling that the basis for the termination of the grants was illegal. So what this is translated to practically is that the NIH said there was a memo that was leaked and published in Stat News. The memo or the email was from the end of August. It said that any of the grants that were reinstated by virtue of this lawsuit between June and August would continue to be reinstated and their funding would be assured. And so those grants will get their funding. A colleague of mine just this morning in a meeting reported that he is a subcontract on several of such grants, and that funding is again flowing. For me, however, as an individual researcher based at Harvard University, it's a bit more complicated because of the continued federal freeze on funds to Harvard University. So although technically my grant personally has been reinstated, it was reinstated on July 3rd, I am still unable to access the funds because of the other sets of politics involving funding of research at Harvard University.
How have recent policies that are rooted in the structural racism that you described continue to affect health and access to healthcare in the United States? Why is this still important?
I think it's really important to remember that we are embodied creatures who embody the societal context in which we live, that early life exposures continue to matter on up through adult experiences of health, experiences of illness, morbidity, and ultimately mortality. So early life exposures are an important part of the story, as well as contemporary exposures. Considering early life exposures, if you pause to think about it, anyone age 61 and older in the United States who was born in the United States was born when Jim Crow was still legal up through 1965. Early life exposure to potentially adverse effects of living in under such conditions would be expected to continue to manifest in the health of adults going forward. So the past remains embodied. We do not suddenly change our bodily composition because the policy changed in this year versus that. We continue to live, and that's why research on birth cohort effects is what generation you were born in and what that means for the age you are now remains really important and really salient. But also structural racism, when understood as the full range of policies and actions intended to keep or at least not oppose past histories of legal racial discrimination based on status of being enslaved or not, based on what happened after the Civil War and the destruction of Reconstruction, based on indigenous status and tribal status. These policies affect where people live, where they work, the conditions of housing, the quality of the neighborhoods in which people live, the kinds of green space they have, the questions of exposure to air pollution, the kinds of wages people have at their jobs, what jobs they work in. All these things are connected, and not looking at that misses a huge part of understanding why population health is patterned as it is.
Finally, why does health equity research continue to be important, not only for the communities that are actually the focus of the studies, but also for U.S. society more broadly?
Work in health equity is important for the populations that are bearing the brunt of the burden of how injustice harms health, but the information gleaned from these studies is applicable to everyone. So you get generalizable knowledge that's important for understanding what makes everyone thrive. In the perspective piece, we discuss a specific piece of research that was done at the healthcare facility level to improve the treatment care for people with breast and lung cancer. And what would happen by bringing in a racial equity standpoint is that it improved completion rates for not only the Black, but also the white patients, as well as close the gap between the Black and white patients. So taking an approach that's looking at the barriers and obstacles that people were facing to get the appropriate kinds of care they needed as part of their oncology treatment was important for improving the health care of everyone. And this is a really important point. It's the part where we do all come together as one society. We're all affected by what goes on with Medicare policies. Those are universal. There's different issues as to who gets Medicaid, But there are policies that matter for everyone that affect the quality of the data and the quality of the treatment. And the health equity research can reveal that as well and set the basis for creating a society in which everyone can thrive.
Thank you, Dr. Krieger. Funding for this podcast is provided by the Doris Duke Foundation, committed to building a creative, equitable, and sustainable future.